Well, good morning.
Good morning.
And please open to Ephesians 4. We'll introduce our message this morning with a little history. Approximately 7 weeks after the people of the Exodus left Egypt, they arrived at Sinai. Sinai was where they would receive the Ten Commandments. In Exodus 24, the covenant was confirmed. The people claimed that they would abide by all the words that God gave them, and this was important. The law was a binding constitution for the nation under God. It legislated how Israel was to live in order to be blessed by God and used by God as the kingdom's priests. The law also revealed the holiness of God. In doing so, it revealed sin as well. But what the law condemned, it also made provision for in the sacrifice and the feast intended for atonement. So the law was good and perfect and holy, as it tells us in the New Testament. God commanded Moses to come up to the mountain to meet with God. Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights, but during that time the people grew impatient. In our current series, we've been discussing the presence of false gods in the world. This is nothing new. It's always been the case. We saw it back in Genesis 6. We saw it again in Genesis 11, Tower of Babel. And at that time, the entire world spoke one language. When the people disobeyed God, God's command to spread out and populate the earth, God confused their language. As a result, the people were forced to spread out. And this is how the nations were formed. Each of these nations, however, was under the influence of false gods. The principle applies in every civilization that ever existed. Every civilization worships something. If it's not the Lord God, it will be another god. And that was the case with Egypt. The Egyptians worshipped false gods. They worshipped many gods. When the people of Israel were in captivity in Egypt, they saw visible representations of the Egyptian gods. They even participated in the worship of these gods. And we saw that in the book of Joshua. But after entering Canaan, the new land, they had a covenant. There was a covenant in place, and that covenant forbid them from worshipping false gods. To do so at that point would break the covenant. But what did we see in Exodus 32? They made a golden calf. They built an altar before it. They offered burnt offerings and peace offerings to it. Then they ate, drank, and they partied. That was the first case of national apostasy recorded in the Bible. In our last session, we discussed the fact that this event is being played out in America today. The nation as a whole, our nation, has turned its back on God to worship idols. In doing so, we have opened the door for demons. Now, in our current series, we've already discussed the Canaanite god Baal, Baal, however you want to call it, Baal. I've heard it pronounced a number of different ways. The worship of Baal was widespread among the Canaanite nations that inhabited the Promised Land. Baal was their god of prosperity. Interestingly enough, the worship of Baal is up and running today in America. Now, in our last session, we noted the appearance of the bull on Wall Street, the place of American prosperity. Could it be that, just as Israel in the Old Testament worshipped the golden calf, today America worships the god of prosperity in the appearance of the bull? Well, you can judge for yourselves. But there's one fact that requires no judging, because it's obvious. Today in America, prosperity has become an idol. Let me repeat that. Today in America, prosperity has become an idol, and people are killing themselves to have it. And where there are idols, however, there are demons. How does this happen? It starts when a nation begins turning away from God. By turning away from God, a nation turns away from its only wall of protection. That leaves the door open for demons. By turning away from God, America left the door open for the return of the demons that once inhabited the ancient world. Now, anybody with any discernment can see this. In turning away from God, Americans now serve many gods. Americans serve the gods of money, pleasure, success, acceptance, sex, addiction, work, comfort, porn, self, the internet, you name it. There are many gods that America worships today. We spent some time on that before we closed out our last session. Today, many Americans worship the God of technology. This is a good one. And it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. Wherever you look, you got people. I think they're talking to themselves. I've seen somebody in the gym. This was a couple of years ago. I saw somebody in the gym where I was at that time. And the guy's talking. He's talking. He's walking around like this. He's talking. I'm thinking, I want to avoid this guy. I came to realize he was talking into a phone. He was talking to somebody. Anyway, off the subject here. We worship today the gods of technology. And this is occurring in the area of AI, artificial intelligence. What used to be called an arms race has developed into a race to create the most superior form of technology in the world. But what man is accomplishing by this is twofold. First, man's creating a form of technology that has the potential to take over the world. These computerized robots that are being created today can learn at a much faster rate than humans can and perform much more efficiently than humans. As a result, they're taking over the function of humans in many areas of life, many fields. Second, these robots are becoming more like humans, and humans are becoming less like humans. How do we arrive at this point? We made a god out of technology. And now, because we've subjected ourselves to the influence of demons, we're worshiping the work of God's, worshiping the work of man's hands. And in doing so, we created the temple for Baal right here inside our own borders. Now, this morning, we're going to discuss another god. In fact, we're going to be discussing two gods this morning. Another one that we've opened the door to, and you're going to love this one. Only this particular god or deity is not a he, it's a she. In the ancient world, she was given the title Queen of Heaven. Look at Jeremiah 7, verses 17 and 18. Do you not see what they are doing in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? The children gather wood, the fathers kindle the wood, and the women knead dough to make cakes for the Queen of Heaven. And they pour out drink offerings to other gods in order to spite me. To the Romans, this particular goddess was called Venus, the goddess of sexuality. She was also the goddess of war, destruction, brandishing weapons, and entering into combat. She was full of unbridled passion, insatiable sexual desire, and limitless pride. She would become vengeful and violent if offended in any way. She was the breaker of rules, the trespasser of boundaries, the transgressor of standards. According to one myth, she demanded entrance into the land of the dead. According to another, she demanded that the gods give to her the bull of heaven to get revenge on her enemies. She was the goddess of prostitution. The prostitutes of the ancient world worshipped her as their protector. She was a seducer, a temptress. Her images appeared in many places in the form of clay idols and stone relics. She was also an enchantress and a sorceress. Her worship was saturated with carnality, sensuality, and open sexuality. Sound familiar? Look at Paul's words in Ephesians 4, starting in verse 17. So this I say and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they, having become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. This kind of conduct characterized the ancient world. Much of it took place in the temples. Now, these temples housed priestesses who under the name of religion, performed sexual acts for a price. It was all connected to the goddess. In Assyrian and Babylonian mythology, the goddess's lover was known as Tammuz. Now, you might have heard that name before. It appears in Scripture. Look at Ezekiel 8, verse 14. Then he brought me to the entrance of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north. And behold, women were sitting there weeping for Tammuz. To the Greeks, this goddess was known as Aphrodite. To the Assyrians and Babylonians, she was called Ishtar. Now this brings us to a type of worship called goddess worship. Goddess worship included the worship of various types of goddesses. There were mother goddesses, nature goddesses, warrior goddesses, and also other types of goddesses. They went by various names. They appeared in the past and they're present today, which we will see. It wasn't long after Israel entered Canaan that the people started to involve themselves with the gods of the nations. Look at what it says in Judges 2, verse 13. So they forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Ashtoreth. Now, look at that name, Ashtoreth. It's just another name for Ishtar. The scripture points to the connection here between Baal and the Ashtoreth or Ishtar. Look at Judges 10, verse 6. Then the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, served the Baals and the Ashtoreth. Connection also appears in 1 Samuel 12, verse 10. They cried out to the Lord and said, "We have sinned because we have forsaken the Lord and have served the Baals and the Ashtoreth." Question, why do these two names appear together? The answer takes us back to Jesus' words in Matthew 12, verse 45. Then it goes and takes along with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there, and the last state of the man becomes worse than the first. It started with Baal or Baal, however you want to pronounce it. Israel turned away from God, thus leaving the door open, and through the open door came Baal. Baal represents Ishtar, and with Ishtar came unbridled sexuality, licentiousness, and decadence. Baal contained elements of all of these factors, but they were realized through Ishtar. The god of apostasy ushered in the goddess of sexual licentiousness. And that brings us to Paul's words in Romans 1. God gave them over. In other words, God allowed the immoral degenerates, these degenerates, to go in the direction they kept choosing to go in. And they kept drifting farther and farther and farther into depravity. But how does this play out in the case of America? Well, the scenario today is pretty much the same. The effects of America's turning away from God began to show in the 60s. It opened the door for the entrance of Baal, and what followed? The spread of sexual immorality. Biblical standards for sexuality and marriage began to erode, and these standards continue to erode up to the present day. The goddess's entrance into America can be summarized in the phrase sexual revolution. The very same gods that disappeared from the ancient world reappeared in the present world. And sexual revolution was just another form of paganism. The values it represented were pagan values. What they call the new morality today is not all that new. It's nothing more than a reappearance of the old. The faces of the individuals involved have changed, but the gods are the same. Their objective is to destroy morality and faith, thus establishing the potential to destroy a nation. It's obvious what's going on today. In the mid-20th century America, sexuality was seen as something sacred, to be shared between a man and a woman in a lifelong commitment of marriage. Sex outside of marriage was seen as a sin. If a woman became pregnant before marriage, she and the father were expected to marry. The divorce rate was small. There were not many children who were born outside of wedlock. Prostitution existed, but it was considered illegal. Pornography was not part of mainstream culture. People who were involved in such activities kept it private. The entertainment industry and popular culture upheld, for the most part, the same values. So what went wrong? Well, we as a nation turned away from God. And that which was not God became a god. We said it in our last session. Everybody worships something. If it's not God, it will be something else. In this case, it was sex. Sex became an end-all. Now, that being the case, sex could be divorced from marriage as well as all other factors and be pursued with complete disregard to all principles involved. When sex became an end-all, there were no standards, no standards that prohibited it or limited it in any way. Now, in that way, the act of sex itself became just like the goddess. She was never faithful, always promiscuous, always seducing, always pursuing sexual relations. When the spirit of Ishtar entered the door, marriage eroded, sexuality was glorified. Instant gratification became the goal, and actions had no consequences. A culture of individualism exploded on the scene. Commitment died. What was once taboo became the norm. The number of children being born out of wedlock skyrocketed. The spirit found its way into every realm of society. What was once considered taboo could be seen everywhere. Television, movie screens, internet, commercials. It appeared in the way people dressed. The phrase dress for success was being replaced by dress to attract, allure, or seduce. Getting in shape was no longer practiced for health reasons. It was also practiced to attract sexual partners. There were no limits to the spirit's nature, no boundaries that couldn't be transgressed, no taboos that couldn't be broken. Sexual immorality was not only introduced and promoted, it was now sanctified. It became part of a cult and worship of Ishtar. Any standard that opposed it's labeled sinful, hateful, or evil. And anybody who opposed it was considered a heretic. When the spirit of Baal had begun, the spirit of Ishtar took to another level. And the last state became worse than the first. Where did it all begin? It began long ago in the ancient Middle East. Ishtar was considered the patron goddess of prostitutes. Sumer was the earliest known civilization in the region of southern Mesopotamia. The prostitutes who walked the streets of Sumer and those who served in the shrines and the temples of Babylon prayed to Ishtar. They worshipped her. They saw themselves as her servants. Prostitution was part of her cult. She was the role model of prostitutes. She set a standard for prostitutes. The ancient Mesopotamian prostitute could be identified by her jewelry. That was also the case with Ishtar. But she set another standard as well, a greater standard, a monetary standard. It involved sex for money. The pricing of her trade took sex outside of the marriage relationship, brought it into the marketplace. Sex was no longer an exclusive possession of a husband and a wife within the covenant of marriage. It now became the possession of a larger popular culture. That being the case, sexuality became well known, widespread, unbridled, thus assisting in converting it into a commodity to be bought and sold. That was the case in the ancient world, but it also became the case in the modern world when it was brought to America. And sex became a larger commodity still when it was brought into the movies, the music videos, magazines, the internet. This opened the door to industries that didn't exist in the past or industries that operated in the shadows, such as adult magazines, adult videos, adult clubs, adult entertainment. These are all operated in the shadows at one time, but now they're brought into the American mainstream. And all that resulted from getting involved with the idol. There is no limit to the extent man can sink to when man involves himself with the idol, any idol. Principles, the same with regard to any idol, as I just said. The power of the idol. We read a passage last week from Psalm 139. These idols have ears, mouths, eyes, this and that, but they can do nothing. No idol can do anything, but the power behind the idol is the demon that resides there. As the spirit of Ishtar increasingly took hold of American culture, pornographic literature and storylines began entering into the American mainstream. We said it in the past, we're in a war. The tactics and strategies of the enemy are many. One of them involves the world system. Satan, as the god of this world, uses the world system to appeal to the lusts of man. He sends out that appeal in the form of the idol. When man involves himself with the idol, any idol, there's a demon present, waiting to take advantage of the situation. It takes place, as we said, one step at a time. Now, some of you are probably familiar with the name Mae West. Mae West was an American actress, playwright, screenwriter, singer. Her career spanned over 7 decades. Mae West was well known as something else as well. She was a sex symbol, known for her sexual independence and her lighthearted, sexually suggestive sayings. Such things were unheard of in that day. But it opened the door. It opened the door to take that step to the next level. And today, just about everywhere you look, you can see sexual connotations. This is one way in which the idol presents itself. The idol has an enticing quality. When people buy into the enticement, they fall under the influence of the demon. And this is why these things have become widespread today. What's the result? Obviously, sex has become perverted. It's no longer an act of love. Going to strip bars to be entertained by erotic dancers, reading erotic literature, watching erotic movies, has nothing to do with love. The word that comes from erotic here is an interesting word. It comes from the word Eros, E-R-O-S. Eros was the ancient god of the Greeks. Eros was the god of sexual desire and love. Eros was born of Aphrodite, and Aphrodite was a Greek incarnation of Ishtar. So behind the name given to describe the flood that was sweeping over America and the entire world was the pagan god Eros. And behind Eros, of course, was Ishtar. Ishtar's effect on America has become so great that America has become the world's leading creator and exporter of pornography. As I said earlier, it starts in small steps. But when you combine the sin nature with man's allurement of idols in a world system filled with demons, you have a recipe for disaster, to put it mildly. Please go to Isaiah chapter 28. Take a look at another idol that has a strong, enticing quality. But before we get to that, I think most of us are familiar with the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The phrase appeared in the 1969 Life magazine article, which stated, "The counterculture has its sacraments in sex, drugs, and rock." 2 years later, the writer for The Spectator, which is a British magazine, made reference to the phrase saying, "Not for nothing is the youth culture characterized by sex, drugs, and rock and roll." But the phrase really took off in 1977 when British musician Ian Dury released a song using a version of that expression as its title. Since then, variations have been used to name movies, TV shows, books, albums, other rock songs. The phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll might have become popularized over the last 5 decades, but the fact of the matter is, it's one take on a much older expression. The expression consists of 3 simple words: wine, women, and song. It's not clear who coined the phrase. Some believe it originated in the German song lyric and was in print in the 1770s. The song lyric reads, "What does not love wine, women, and song remains a fool." I'm sorry, who does not love wine, women, and song remains a fool his whole life long? The idol in question was popular in the ancient world. You might remember the name Nabal. Nabal was drinking when he suffered a stroke that took his life 10 days later. Belshazzar and his friends were drinking wine out of the gold and silver goblets that were taken from the Jewish temple, and at the same time they were blaspheming God. Ahasuerus was drunk when he wanted his wife to display her beauty in front of all the leaders of his provinces. And finally, look at Isaiah 28, starting in verse 1. Verse 1, "Woe to the proud crown of the drunkards of Ephraim." Look at verse 3. "The proud crown of the drunkards of Ephraim is trodden underfoot." Verse 7. "And these also reel with wine and stagger from strong drink. The priest and the prophet reel with strong drink. They are confused by wine. They stagger from strong drink. They reel while having visions. They totter when rendering judgment. For all the tables are full of filthy vomit, without a single clean place." The idol in question here has to do with substances of intoxication. Now, obviously, this is nothing new. It goes all the way back to the ancient world and is connected with the influence of Ishtar. There's a connection with the name Ishtar and another word, the word tavern. Now, there were many taverns in the ancient world. The tavern, the temple of Aphrodite was located in Corinth. Now, you can already make the connection. The influence of Ishtar was widespread throughout the city of Corinth. But because Corinth was easily accessible by ship, her influence was known throughout the ancient world. And many people took advantage of it. But the temple wasn't the only attraction. There were taverns on the south side of the marketplace, and many drinking vessels had been dug up from these liquor lockers. Corinth was noted for everything sinful. Every shop in the city had a deep, spring-fed well in which to cool containers of wine. The Greek historian Strabo wrote that all the people of Corinth gorged themselves. It was even customary in stage plays for actors to come on stage drunk. All of this indicates Ishtar had a very powerful influence in the areas of seduction and intoxication. And her influence in both areas found its way to America. After World War II, alcohol consumption began rising. Now that continued for a number of decades. As a side note, the stay-at-home orders that were issued under the Biden administration and enforced by Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf played a major role in that as well, the rise of alcohol consumption today. But as always, there's a bigger picture. It involves the presence of demons in the world. And as usual, leaders of nations play into it. Back in the 60s, with the rise of alcohol consumption, came another form of intoxication. It involved the use of drugs. And it evolved into what was called the drug culture. It involved many kinds of drugs. But some of the drugs that were used at that time radically altered perception. That has evolved in an American epidemic today and has claimed the lives of many young people. But all of it can be traced back to Ishtar. The spirit of Ishtar had manifested itself in American culture in areas of sexuality and intoxicating substances. And a third component appeared on the scene as well, music. I remember my father, years ago, saying that music should be relaxing. He had a point. I didn't agree with it at the time, but he had a great point. When you listen to the music today, music. Therefore, we have the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll. The beat goes on. But in this case, literally. Countless numbers of people of all ages move to the beat. I don't think I told this story here. I know I've told it to people in the past. When I used to work at in the public school system, I did one of my assignments was the cafeteria. I supervised cafeteria during lunches. At some point, the administration thought it was a bright idea to put TVs, televisions in the cafeteria. How they came up with that, I don't know, but it goes back to, I guess, our leaders. Anyway, I'm off the subject here. One of the TVs was on, and there was a commercial on about, and the commercial had something to do with music. And a bunch of kids are gathered around there. You could get 300 people in the cafeteria, even more at that time, which was another good idea of the administration, but again, I'm off the subject. All of a sudden, the band came on playing music. You can see like maybe 50 kids just start moving to the music. What is that? It's something more than human nature. There's another attraction working behind the scenes there. Countless numbers of people move to the beat. Could that be the influence of the spirit also? You be the judge. Here's a good one. American singer and dancer Beyoncé claims that when she performs, she's under the control of a demon, who she refers to as Sasha Fierce. In her own words, Beyoncé says, "I have someone else that takes over when it's time for me to work and when I'm on stage. This alter ego that I've created, that kind of protects me and who I really am." This kind of thing is not to be taken lightly. In one of Beyoncé's appearances, Sasha Fierce is wearing a metal plate featuring prominently the face of Baphomet. Baphomet is also featured on the sigil of the Church of Satan. A sigil is an inscribed or painted symbol said to have magical power. Baphomet is an enigmatic goat-headed figure that appears several times in the history of occultism. Now, as we noted in the previous series, from the Knights Templar of the Middle Ages and the Freemasons of the 19th century to modern currents of occultism, the occult in America is live and well. To reiterate the point, when a person or a group or a nation turns away from God, it creates a void. The door then is left open for something to fill that void. The Bible supports this. Please go to 1 Kings, 1 Kings 11. The same scenario occurred in the life of Solomon. Now, as we said in the past, Solomon had a good start in his reign as king of Israel. He was a man of prayer, Solomon. He prayed for the wisdom to lead God's people, and God blessed them abundantly. Solomon was given the privilege of building a house for the Lord, and he praised the Lord when he dedicated the temple. But something went wrong in 1 Kings 11. Look at verse 1. "Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, 'You shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods.' Solomon held fast to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned his heart away. For when Solomon was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the detestable idol of the Ammonites." Solomon's many wives led him away from God. See, these wives were women of foreign nations, and these foreign nations worshiped gods. Solomon brought them in as his wives and concubines, and he ended up worshiping the gods as well. See, he created the void when he turned away from God, and something, of course, filled the void. And that scenario has occurred throughout all of history. The spiritual void that's left in God's absence drew millions of people into the darkness. Another form of darkness that appeared on the scene is the practice of witchcraft. With the arrival of witchcraft came a number of women identifying as witches. One of them was Tom Brady's ex-wife, Giselle Bundchen. With regard to his wife, Tom Brady said, "She's so about the power of intention and believing things that are really going to happen. And she always makes a little altar for me at the game because she just wills it so much. So she put together a little altar for me that I could bring with pictures of my kids," Brady said. Brady also mentioned his wife gave him healing stones, protection stones, special drops, and a necklace to wear, along with mantras to recite. That one may surprise many fans, but keep in mind, Giselle is a good witch. Ironically, after his divorce from Giselle, Tom Brady suffered his first losing season. Coincidence? You be the judge. But bear in mind the fact that Satan empowers his people. Please go to Exodus 7. Some of you might be familiar with the story of Aaron's rod. Before the 10 plagues, God sent Moses and Aaron to Pharaoh to demand the release of God's people. God commanded Moses to tell Aaron to throw down his staff before Pharaoh. Look at what happened in Exodus 7, verse 9. "When Pharaoh speaks to you, saying, 'Work a miracle,' then you shall say to Aaron, 'Take your staff and throw it down before Pharaoh, that it may become a serpent.' So Moses and Aaron came to Pharaoh, and thus they did, just as the Lord had commanded. And Aaron threw his staff down before Pharaoh and his servants, and it became a serpent. Then Pharaoh also called for the wise men and the sorcerers, and they also, the magicians of Egypt, did the same with their secret arts. For each one threw down his staff, and they turned into serpents." Where do you think this power to turn the magicians' rods into serpents originated from? It certainly was not the magicians. It came from the same power that will empower the beast in Revelation 13, verse 2. "And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority." That same power can be seen at work in the world today. The same power that empowered the occult movements of the past is empowering occult movements of the present. And the source is Satan. And that applies in the case of goddess worship, which we've been noting. Before moving on, let's look at one more example. This particular form of goddess worship was an outgrowth of the feminist movement that occurred at about the same time as other present-day occult movements. All of these movements, sexual revolution, women identifying as witches, mind-altering substances accompanied by music, all have a common connection. All led to the paganization of the American culture. All make up what's called the new morality, which is nothing more than a revival of pagan morality. The New Age movement is not new. I think we discussed this in the past. It's a revival of pagan rituals, religious practices that have been around for centuries. Remember Solomon's words? Nothing new under the sun. And that applies in the case of evil as well. Everything that's been taking place in America today has been done before. Such evils might appear in different forms. They might be carried out in different ways. Over time, they come and go, but they're all prevalent in our culture today. And they're all connected to one spirit, the spirit of Ishtar, the sacred goddess of all prostitutes. But there's still one more spirit to note. We already studied Baal, the devastating effects of that he's had in the past and the present. We just took a look at Ishtar. We're not done with Ishtar. The next spirit we're going to note appeared in a number of places in the Old Testament as well. Please go to 1 Kings 11. Begun to get into Ishtar, her effects, the Ishtar, this demon's effects go well above and beyond what we've already talked about. In 1 Kings 11, look at verse 7. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. Question, who are Chemosh and Molech? Well, according to the verse, they're gods of different nations. But could they be the same spirit? That's very possible. The name Moloch appears in Leviticus 18, verse 21. You shall not give any of your offspring to offer them to Moloch, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Now, this verse connects Moloch with the giving of children. Now, what does that mean? Well, let's take a look at it. Please go to 2 Chronicles 28. Look at what it says concerning Manasseh in 2 Kings 21, verse 4 on the board. He built altars in the house of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem I will put my name. For he built altars for all the host of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. He made his son pass through fire. Note that phrase, made his son pass through fire. That's a reference to child sacrifice. Manasseh practiced child sacrifice. Ahaz practiced child sacrifice. In 2 Chronicles 28, look at verse 1. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and he did not do right in the sight of the Lord as David his father had done. But he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel. He also made molten images of the Baals. Moreover, he burned incense into the valley of Ben-Hinnom and burned his sons in fire, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had driven out before the sons of Israel. But what does that have to do with Moloch? Well, let's keep looking. Josiah was the son of Ammon and the grandson of Manasseh. Josiah was one of the few good kings who reigned in Judah. He took steps to cleanse the temple and everything that was connected to the worship of Baal and the Ashtoreth. He did away with the idolatrous priests that burned incense to Baal. He also destroyed the houses of the cult prostitutes. But look at what else he did in 2 Kings 23, verse 10. He also defiled Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire of Moloch. Moloch's name also appears here, and it's connected with the phrase, pass through fire. Now, this tells us the worship of Moloch also included child sacrifice, the darkest of all sins. But again, it's nothing new. It's a sin that's been committed throughout the world for thousands of years. The Aztecs, the Incas, and the other groups in South and Central America practiced child sacrifice. It's always combined with the worship of a pagan deity. In this case, the deity in question is Moloch. Moloch worship was practiced by the Ammonites and the Canaanites. Back in 1 Kings 11, this deity was called Chemosh. So what we see here is the same spirit is given different names. The same case with Ishtar. Same spirit, different names. But no matter what the name, the Bible speaks of this sin as the most grievous of abominations. The act of children, sacrificing children, is from the pit of hell. It indicates that a nation has turned entirely against the ways of God. Such nations in the past have become lost to God. In the poem Paradise Lost, John Milton writes, Moloch, horrid king, besmeared with blood of human sacrifice and parents' tears, though for the noise of drums and timbrels loud, their children's cries unheard, that passed through fires to his grim idol. Winston Churchill used the figure of Moloch with reference to Adolf Hitler. He had conjured up the fearful idol of an all-devouring Moloch, of which he was the priest and incarnation. What's the point here? It emphasizes the fact that worshiping Moloch is nothing new. He was present, Moloch, in the ancient world, and he was present during the World War II era. Along with the Canaanites, the Phoenicians practiced child sacrifice. Child sacrifice was also practiced in the African colony of Carthage. According to the Greek historian Diodorus Siculus, there was in their city a bronze image of Cronus, extending its hands, palms up, and sloping toward the ground, so that each of the children were placed thereon, rolled down, and fell into a sort of gaping pit filled with fire. Who was Cronus? Cronus was a Greek version of the Roman Saturn, the god who devoured his own children. So we see that child sacrifice is nothing new. It was practiced among a number of pagan nations, many of which surrounded Israel. That being the case, what do you think is going to happen if Israel should turn away from God? Please go to Jeremiah 32 as we get ready to close out this segment. In Jeremiah 32, I'll give you a minute to get there. Look at verse 35. They built the high places of Baal that are in the valley of Ben-Hinnom to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire to Moloch, which I had not commanded them, nor had it entered my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. Look at verse 26, Jeremiah 32, 26. What would result from committing such abominations, starting in verse 26? Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, Behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is anything too difficult for me? Therefore, thus says the Lord, Behold, I am about to give this city into the hand of the Chaldeans and into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he will take it. The Chaldeans who are fighting against this city will enter the city and set the city on fire and burn it, with the houses where people have offered incense to Baal on their roofs and poured out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger. Indeed, the sons of Israel and the sons of Judah have been doing only evil in my sight from their youth. For the sons of Israel have been only provoking me to anger by the work of their hands, declares the Lord. Indeed, this city has been to me a provocation of my anger and my wrath from the day that they've built it, even to this day, so that it should be removed from before my face, because of all the evil of the sons of Israel and the sons of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger. They, their kings, their leaders, their priests, their prophets, the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, they have turned their back to me and not their face, though I taught them, teaching again and again, that they would not listen and receive instruction. But they put their detestable things in the house, which is called by my name, to defile it. Jeremiah prophesied to the people of Judah who had already been taken into captivity in Babylon. His ministry began in 627 BC and it ended not long after the fall of Jerusalem. The sin of child sacrifice locked this nation's fate into place. Question that emerges, is child sacrifice taking place today? Well, the answer is obvious. And unless something changes, these same results will occur. Why is it happening? Because by turning our back on God, America opened the door to these ancient gods as they entered the modern world, and we'll continue to see that throughout the rest of the series. Let's close in prayer. Thank you, Father, for the privilege to gather together today to worship you in spirit and in truth. And thank you for the truth that you've imparted to us. Empower us, Father, to use this to bring glory to you, and to bring justice into this world and glory to you. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.